Blog Talk Radio.
Let's do it.
Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, and the crew coming to you live. It's family Saturday. It's family time. Let's get busy, y'all. We got work to do. It starts right now. Oh, yeah. Better love. And that's what we got. Oh, yeah. Welcome, 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 brothers and sisters, to Empowerment Saturday, African American Empowerment Saturday. I'm coming to you live from the RBC, Revelation Bible Fellowship Class Conference here in Richmond. That's right, we're talking about spiritual development. We're talking about a need for vision, which our people need, a need for health and healing, and a need for spiritual development. All of that's happening right as we speak. But also, we got to look at doing the other work. That is the work of working on ourselves as African Americans. This show is directly and specifically for African Americans. That's right. That's what we have to do to work. We have to do the work of working on ourselves. How do we do that? It's my suggestion that we do the work, and that is the peace concept. Y'all saying, hey, Marvin, what's peace? It's politics, economics, athletics, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. He said, that's a whole lot to do, but that's the work that we have to do. We need a political agenda. You better understand the politics. If y'all not going out and vote in this population for the resources that we need, then we're not going to get some stuff that we need, right? Some people might be against it. I'm for it. I'm saying let's get some resources to build schools, right? If you can't develop it yourself, where are you going to get it from? But we understand the system. We can work the system, right? We understand welfare and TANF and all of that, how we understand how important voting is to get the money that we need to build these institutions that define our own reality, that they owe us, right, for the work that our ancestors did. It's called reparation. They need to reparate us, right, give us back what we need so we can get on our feet. And if we can't do it for ourselves, how are we going to get it done? They take your boots away and take your straps away, then what do you have? You can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps if you don't have boots or straps. How about that? All I'm saying is let's do the work of working on ourselves. We need an economic platform that really looks at how we're going to get the resources in to our coffers so that we can develop those institutions that really help us look at what we need to do to get things done, to do that for ourselves. Nobody else is going to do that for us. And it's my commitment to doing the work, to helping us politically, economically, to be able to get that platform, to get those resources. We need resources to do work. We need to buy farms, and then we need to learn how to work them. That's right. We need to buy land, right? If you don't have the money, how can you buy land? And then what you do with it once you get it, right? And if you had a farm when you need to take care of the animals, and veterinarian bills and all that, you need money. But how about this? You need money for your own family. You need food, clothes, and shelter for your children. And give them great opportunities so they don't have to worry about scavenging around, trying to strive to survive, and raping and robbing and pillaging to make sure that they just survive. That's over with. Now the A. A is really simple. That's what we're talking about today at the conference as well. That is an athletic agenda, which is really talking about health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition, how to take care of your body, take care of your mind. Those are the tools that you need, right, to take care of your body, your temple. You got to be healthy, brothers and sisters. Somebody out there, listen to me. You got to take care of your body. You're going to have to do the work of taking care of your health because your health is your wealth. Nobody else is going to do that for you. You're going to have to do that for yourself. You're going to have to take care of your body. You're going to have a fitness, a health, and wellness agenda, which includes mental health as well. You're going to have to do the job of taking care of your mental, physical, and emotional health. You're just going to have to do it. And we're going to have to do that together. Right? We're going to have health to be a priority in our communities because we're sick. We lead the league in health disparities. We do the research. It's there, right? University will tell you. Every university will tell you if you look up health disparities with African Americans, we are leading the world in health disparities. Next is C, culture. Relevant cultural programs like this one and many others and stuff that you're going to hear today from Brother Akebulin really helps us to think about how we're doing what we're doing, right? There's the cultural piece that is the boundaries, is the roadmap, is the guide to help us continue to empower ourselves and to improve our condition in this country and in the world. We have to do that. And last is education. It's a comprehensive education. That's an education that covers it all. And we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to do that work of working on ourselves that we can be sound and that we can do everything that we put our minds to. All we have to do is understand how to get into the process of peace and then do the work of working on ourselves and then to stand back in the moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just,
man,
I
we
just
got
love
the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brothers and sisters, Brother Stan is right. We need institutions that define our own reality and stop trying to get in somebody else's, right? There's nothing wrong with having a job and having a career. But how about we develop Fortune 500 companies and institutions that provide employment and opportunity for our people? Why are we doing that? We're in the wealthiest nation in the world, and we're poor, and we have resources that we just let run right out the door. How can we channel those resources back into our community to help ourselves out? Can we help us help ourselves? That's what we need to do. More than ever, we have to do the work of working on changing the things that we need to change in order to get the work done. Nobody else is going to do that for us. We're going to have to do that for ourselves. And now, the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Brother George is off this week, so I got to do it another way. But he'll be back next week. He's out there doing the work in the community as always. So this week, we're going to go back to our Willie Lynch segment. Hold on for a second. We'll be right back.
Slave owner in the West Indies. He was invited to the colony of Virginia in 1712 to teach his methods to slave owners there. The term lynching is derived from his last name. Greetings, gentlemen. I greet you here on the bank of the James River in the year of our Lord, 1712. First, I shall thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia, for bringing me here. I'm here to help you solve some of your problems with slaves. Your invitation reached me on my modest plantation in the West Indies, where I have experimented with some of the newest and still the oldest methods for control of slaves. Ancient Rome would envy us if my program is implemented, as our boat sails south on the James River, named for our illustrious king, whose version of the Bible we cherish. I saw enough to know that your problem is not unique. While Rome used cords of wood as crosses for standing human bodies along its highways in great numbers, you are here using the tree and the rope on occasion. I caught the whiff of a dead slave hanging from a tree a couple miles back. And you're not only losing valuable stock by hangings, you are having uprisings, slaves are running away, your crops are sometimes left in the fields too long for maximum profit, you suffer occasional fires, your animals are killed. Gentlemen, you know what your problems are. I do not have to elaborate. I'm not here to enumerate your problems. I'm here to introduce you to a method of solving them. In my bag here, I have foolproof methods for controlling your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that if installed correctly, it will control the slaves for at least 400 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it. I have outlined a number of differences among slaves, and I take these differences and I make them bigger. I use fear, distrust, and envy for control purposes. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. Take this simple little list of differences and think about them. On the top of my list is age, but it's there only because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. There is intelligence, size, sex, sizes of plantations, status on plantations, attitude of owners, whether the slaves live in the valley, on a hill, east, west, north, south, have fine hair, coarse hair, or is tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall assure you that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. The black slaves, after receiving this indoctrination, shall carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Don't forget, you must pitch the old versus the old black male versus the young black male. The young black male against the old black male. You must use the dark-skinned slaves versus the light-skinned slaves and the light-skinned slaves versus the dark-skinned slaves. You must use the female versus the male and the male versus the female. You must also have white servants and overseers who distrust all black, but it's necessary that your slaves trust and depend on us. They must love, respect, and trust only us. Gentlemen, these kids are your keys to control them. Use them. Have your wives and children use them. Never miss an opportunity. If used intensely for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. That is about enough. Enough of that. Man, that's a whole lot, right? Because it got us working against each other. We got to work together. We're going to have to do that work, y'all. Get together and let the work begins with starting to come together and coalesce and not divide. We're going to have to do that work, y'all. The power in ourselves. We're going to have to commit to doing that work of changing the condition that our people live in. Changing the hostility. Changing the violence. Changing the community. And doing that great work that we know we need to do. Nobody else is going to do that for us. I'm asking you to make a commitment today to do that work. Right? Don't divorce your mate, Brother Akebelan said. Divorce Western culture. Why? Because it's corrupt in many ways. It's divisive in many ways. And you're going to have to decide that you want to choose family over some other stuff, over materialism. Start taking care of your babies again. Start taking care and nourishing your seeds, Father. Take care of your wives and your daughters. Your sons, brothers, sisters, love your husbands and your boys and your girls. Let's start taking care of each other once again. That's our commitment to family. Family first, brothers and sisters. Family first. We're going to have to make a commitment to taking care of each other. That's the work that we must do, and we must do that immediately. We're going to have to commit to education, educating our babies, and doing that right work that we know we need to do. Because it is incumbent upon us to know the work that we need to do for the next generation. And it is up to us to get that work done. It's mental, physical, spiritual, social, emotional. And you're going to have to stop letting it go in one ear and out the other and make a commitment to change. We need it. This is my plea. Please look at ourselves and the condition that we're in. And look at and listen to what they said that Willie Lynch is. And then make a covenant with yourself and a commitment to change that makes our communities and our families and the work that we need to do worth it, worthy, and worthwhile for not only ourselves, but our children and the next generation. And now it's time to bring Brother Akebelan in. We're having a conversation with him today about his book, Divorce. Not your mate, but Western culture. I think I got that right. Anyway, Brother Akebelan.
Yeah. Hotel, brother,
so,
can you hear me?
How you feeling, brother?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. You had a moment of silence for the segment. So I hope we didn't lose anybody, but if you got one person online, then I'll speak to that one person.
All right. I got them.
Before
they
I get
on
started,
board. They
I hope
would.
People got, if you got paper and pencil, get paper and pencil on hand, because I'm going to substantiate everything I got to say. If you got a computer, a laptop, have that next to you. I don't expect you to get online while I'm talking, but after I finish, I want you to research everything I'm talking about. Don't take my word for it. Research everything. Before I get started, let me spell my name, because when you're doing stuff on the phone and people can't see you, they're not necessarily going to get the information. So some words I'll be spelling this. Make sure you got the correct spelling of a word. My name is spelled Al-Kebulon, A like an apple, L like a lure, K like a kangaroo, E like an eagle, B like a boy, U like an umbrella, dash, small L like a lure, small E like an apple, and small N like a Nancy. People say I talk fast, so I'm going to try to slow it down. Hopefully I don't slow it down too slow. I'm going to start with a brief bio. I have over 40 years experience doing volunteer work with youth and adults. My journey as an author started while volunteering at Beaumont Juvenile Correction Center in Beaumont, Virginia. Day I would come, the guard would ask, "What church are you a part of?" I would answer, "I'm not a part of a church, I'm part of a study group." The next time I came, he would ask, "What church are you a part of?" Again, I would answer, "I'm not part of a church, I'm part of a study group." The next time I came, he would ask the same question. I eventually said, "Why do you ask me the same question every time I come? I keep telling you, I'm not a part of a church, I'm with an African study group." He responded, "I ask because the Christians have a program here, and they have 6 students. The Muslims have a program here, and they have 3 students. You have 35, and many more waiting to join. I just knew you had to be coming from a church." I responded, "Thanks, but I'm not." While we were talking, the Christian sister walked by, and the Muslim brother walked by, and he did not search their books, but he searched mine. I asked why. He answered, "She has the Holy Bible, and he has the Holy Quran. We don't have to check them." So that was the key to reaching my people, I said. "I know religion more than I know any other subject. So I wrote a Bible in less than 30 days just to reach the youth. I went back to Beaumont with my Bible. The guard said, 'What's that?' I answered, 'Bible.' He checked it out and let me go through the gate. While I was walking in, a video fell out of my bag. It was Dr. Ben's African Origin of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. The guard said, 'What's that?' I answered, 'It's a companion to the Bible.' And he let me go. After giving those young writers a taste of Dr. Ben, whose full name is Dr. Yosef Ben-Yakana, and Dr. John Henry Clark, they were thirsty for knowledge. I had so much success at Beaumont Juvenile Correction Center that they heard about me at Coffeewood Juvenile Correction Center, which is about 2.5 hours away. I worked at Coffeewood Juvenile Correction Center for boys, and later they switched to girls, and I worked with the girls, and I did a program there. Coffeewood is in Mitchell's, Virginia, near Culpeper. After that, I became a foster parent for 12 years, and from there, I became a youth counselor. And being a senior myself, I figured I could relate to seniors. Therefore, I did senior companion care. So I've got experience working with my people from 2 years old to 99. My book titled Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate came about as a result of an African female and male relationship conference I did of the same title. I did it for about 10 years in a row. And I always call it African female. I always put the female first because there is no man on this planet that's not born of a woman. So when I speak, I always start with the female first. My eyes became open to the subjects we discussed on the African American Empowerment Association many years before. I started a study group in my home around the 1980s. George Brown of the Willa Lynch Report and a brother named Khali led the sessions. Many people heard about our study group and wanted to join, but when the we challenged them on certain things, and many graduated magna cum laude. Who are we to question them? We said things like Doug Wilder was not the first black governor, and Jackie Robinson wasn't the first black major league baseball player. Instead of looking it up, they would argue and not come back. I admit I was intimidated by George's knowledge and wisdom. I was intimidated by Carly's knowledge and wisdom. But I couldn't run like the others because the meeting was held in my house. And I never told George this. But instead of running, I gave myself 2 years to catch up with him. He said I passed him. I wouldn't say that, but I gave myself 2 years to catch up with him. With that said, education has very little to do with what I give you. It has to do with what you give me. I impart information, tapping into that untapped potential to bring out that which is already in you. No teacher wants a student to be a carbon copy of her or himself. You must go beyond that which the teacher gave you. I had to go beyond what George Brown gave me. I had to go beyond what Dr. Bruce Bridges gave me. For that reason, when we have a question and answer session, I do not take direct questions. I do not. I will accept comments, constructive criticism. I even accept harsh criticism. If you saw me in person, you don't like my outfit, I didn't have any problem with that. But I do not take direct questions. I accept comments and statement questions only. And I repeat this later on. Here is a statement question. You said Doug Wilder wasn't the first black governor. That is a statement question. That tells me two things. Number one, you heard me. Number two, you want clarification. Then I'll give clarification. Please don't ask me to give you the answer. All right? Everybody that's on this program are African people, hopefully African people, and are able to research this information themselves. And that's what we're going to do this evening. I'm going to give you information, tap into the untapped potential, bring out that which I know is already in you, and then go research the information. As I repeat earlier, my book is titled Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. So often in relationships, a brother will blame a sister for her shortcomings, and a sister will blame a brother for his shortcomings, when the root cause of our problems is not each other, but a culture alien to us. What is culture? A culture is the glue that binds the people together. A culture does for a people what fertilizer does to the soil. It cultivates the soil. It helps make things grow. A culture helps people to grow. There are 7 to 9 aspects of people's culture: history, religion, political organization, economic organization, social organization, creativity, psychology, and each having subcultures. For the sake of time, we will only go through one aspect of people's culture, and that is creativity. Hopefully, I'll be invited back to go through the other aspects of people's culture. Creativity has many subcultures. Creativity is the arts, such as music, dance, drama, literature, sculpturing, and painting. In the title of my book, when I talked about relationships, most people think I'm just talking about romantic relationships. I'm talking about all relationships, a brother and a sister and another sister, a brother and a brother, an employer and its employee. I'm talking about relationships where brothers and sisters can't come together and talk about a subject like religion without shunning the next person. Can't talk about politics without shunning the next person. So I'm talking about all aspects of people's culture and all forms of relationships. Right now, I'm going to deal with creativity, the arts. In 2011, a statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was unveiled in Washington, D.C. All my friends rejoiced. Everyone rejoiced except me, and they shunned me for it. Everyone rejoiced except me. I did not like the statue. The problem I had with the statue is I see Dr. King as a fighter. But how can you fight with your arms folded and no feet? I had a theory that this was deliberately done to make King seem passive. Theories are based on facts. Did I say a theory was a fact? I did not. I said theories are based on facts. You need facts to support your theory. The more facts you have, it seems to be a theory. I went to the computer, and I typed in, was the Martin Luther King Jr. statue with his hands folded and no feet an attempt to make him look passive? I couldn't find the answer I was looking for. I'm 6-0 and representing myself in court. And over the years, I've learned if you can't get the answer, go on through the front door, try the back door. So I typed in the name of the sculptor. It was a Chinese sculptor. His name is Lee Lei Yixin. I'll be spelling words as I go further. Lei Yixin. He was a sculptor. And I found out the United States Commission of Fine Art rejected Lee's original design for the King Memorial statue. In a letter dated April 25th, 2008, the commission wrote that Lee's presentation was too confrontational and asked for a more sympathetic king. The commission recommended that the statue be reworked. Now, how can you not be confrontational when you being sicked on by police dogs and you got the fire department hosing you down? But the commission recommended that the statue be reworked, so that's what you have today. The Commission of Fine Arts is an independent federal agency charged with matters of design as they affect the federal interest and preserve the dignity of the nation's capital. The Commission of Fine Arts has review, but not approval over the designs of all the construction within Washington, D.C. And President Biden in 2001 removed four Trump-appointed members of the U.S. Commission of Fine Arts. He will, if he hasn't already, replace them. And I understand this has been about 110 years since the existence of the commission that a president had to remove some people that were on board. This artwork that we see is not created in a vacuum. The artist just doesn't do their own thing. You have organizations, and their interests might not be your interest that's producing the work that we see. In referencing the King Monument, why do we not analyze art in this way? We don't because we say art is for art's sake. It's just a thing of beauty. Someone wrote, everything is political. And not to understand that is to be politically naive. Art is not for art's sake. It's political. It is politically and socially relevant. However, the art we have been exposed to from monuments, paintings, and music have been relevant to the European experience and not the African experience. In Washington, D.C., you have the Washington Monument, which is a Tekken, spelled T-E-K-H-E-N. It's a Greek. The Greek name is obelisk. You never want to move ahead of the people that you're talking to. For the sake of the audience, I'll use the word obelisk, spelled O-B-L-I-S-K. But the African word is Tekken, T-E-K-H-E-N. There's a difference between the Washington obelisk and the ancient Egyptian obelisk. The ancient Egyptian obelisk is of a single stone. The Washington obelisk, like modern obelisks, are made from different quarries made of several stones. In the 1956 Cecil B. DeMille movie, The Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston played Moses, and Yul Brynner was Ramses. In that movie, the ancient Egyptians were viewed as pagans. Moses and his God had to give the Egyptians a spanking. This movie taught us to hate the Egyptians, who are African people. The Egyptians in the movie, The Ten Commandments, were pagans, according to Hollywood and church. We are taught to shun the Egyptians because they had the Israelites in bondage. It's not quick to forget that biblical Abraham, the father of the Jews, had a wife named Sarah. Sarah had an Egyptian woman named Hagar in bondage to her. In Genesis chapter 16, verse 3, I repeat, Genesis chapter 16, verse 3, Sarah gave the girl to Abraham. Hagar, spelled H-A-G-A-R, had no control over her own body. Therefore, in today's terminology, she would be considered a slave. There was no Exodus yet. So quit villainizing the Egyptians. There are 2 points. I'll make reference to that because in that movie, The Ten Commandments, they built an obelisk. So I'm getting back to that. And there are 2.8 billion Christians in the world. There are approximately 41,000 Christian denominations. The largest of these Christian denominations is the Catholic Church, with 1.8 billion members. Let me repeat. Out of 2.8 billion Christians, 1.8 billion are Catholics. Of the many denominations, the Catholic Church is the largest, larger than Mormons, larger than Jehovah's Witness, larger than the Baptists, the Pentecostals. It's larger than all of them. It is the granddaddy of them all. All right, listen carefully. Because in court, you got to lay down the foundation. You don't walk into the court with evidence. You got to lay down the foundation first and connect the foundation to connect point A to point B. So I mentioned the obelisk earlier. All right, listen carefully. We're told that Egyptians were pagans. All right. In the center of St. Peter's Square in Vatican City is an obelisk. It is an ancient Egyptian obelisk. It's not an obelisk that was made in the United States. It's not an obelisk that was made in Rome, although they have obelisks in Rome that were made in Rome. But this is an ancient Egyptian obelisk, meaning it came from ancient Egyptians. They told us the ancient Egyptians were pagans. Then why is an Egyptian obelisk towering over Vatican City with a cross on top of it? I ask you, if Adolf Hitler was as bad as they say he was, would the Jews have a Nazi swastika towering over Jerusalem? They wouldn't. Then if Egyptians were so bad, why is an obelisk, an Egyptian obelisk, towering over Vatican with a cross on top? I'm going to slow down because I'm going to say something. I'm going to give you the reference. And if I give the reference, I have to slow down. This is a quote. The reference is from it's online. It's called The Story of Vatican Obelisk. Vatican Tips. The Story of the Vatican Obelisk. Vatican Tips. This is a quote. The obelisk at the Vatican is right in the middle of St. Peter's Square. It is said to be around 4,500 years old, making it over 1,500 years older than the city of Rome. It is traditionally known as Caligula's obelisk, as it was Caligula who in 37 AD took the monument from Egypt to have it placed in the circus in Rome. So after the Romans looted Egypt, they took this obelisk and brought it to Rome. I'm going to slow down and give you the link. A lot of this information, I cross-reference over and over again. I got books, but you don't have access to my books, so I can give you a website link. Get your paper and pencil. If you don't have paper and pencil, make sure you get a copy of this message later on. https://VaticanTips.com/Vatican-obelisk/. I repeat, and I'll slow down. https://VaticanTips.com/Vatican-obelisk, OBELISK/. That's a substantiation for the article that I just quoted. The Vatican obelisk bears the same rituals as the ancient Egyptian obelisk. As a sundial, its shadows mark noon over the signs of the zodiac and the white marble disc in the paving of the square. There are 8 ancient Egyptian and 5 ancient Roman obelisks in Rome. There was also an ancient Ethiopian obelisk in Rome. And I have a video with the inside of the Vatican. It's a particular religious organization that just doesn't like the Catholic Church. I won't call the organization out, but the video of the Vatican inside, outside. I'm quite sure there's some secret compartments that we don't have access to. But it's so much Egyptian there, and many of us don't know because the Vatican is not one of the places that we probably wish to go, but it's there. Those are some of the public displays of art. The King statue, the Tekken, or the obelisk in Rome. But what about the art in your home? How did these religious images of the Last Supper and the creation of Adam with a picture of God get there? The religious images we have in our homes are prints from paintings done in the 16th, 15th, and 16th centuries during the Renaissance. Let me repeat. The images in your home, the divine images, religious images in your home are prints, paintings done in the 15th and 16th centuries during the Renaissance. We're going to table it for a moment and start at the beginning. We're going to come back to the Renaissance because you have to know the atmosphere in which these artwork were given birth. That was the Second Council. A lot of people are familiar with the Council of Nicaea 325 AD, but there was a Second Council in Nicaea, 787 AD. I'll slow it down so you can write it down and look it up later. There was a Second Council in Nicaea, 787 AD. This council was commissioned because images, we're talking about art now. I'm gonna bring it to the future, but Your Honor, I got to lay down my foundation. Before I get to the Wizard of Oz and the Dred Scott decision and the Black Panther movie and all those things, I have to lay down the foundation, let you know how all this stuff got started. All right. This council was commissioned because image of the divine was not permitted. Emperor Leo III, before he died, issued a decree against the worship of icons, religious images of Christ and the saints. The iconoclasts, write this down, spell I-C-O-N-O-C-L-A-S-T, I-C-O-N-O-C-L-A-S-T. The iconoclasts were those who would destroy religious images and said they were forbidden in the Bible. Their argument is Exodus chapter 20, verse 4. Exodus chapter 20, verse 4. It says, "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is under the earth." The iconoclasts were mostly poor people who stuck to the Bible. The council were rich folks who wanted images to get their political agenda across. There was an all-out fight at this council. They had to have guards outside to control everything. It was like the Republicans versus the Democrats. The council had its way. They ruled that Jesus, although God, came down to earth as a man. He ate, he drank, he bled like a man. Therefore, he should be seen in his humanity. And the imminent objection to this, you would be cursed. Remind you now, the biblical Jesus had been dead over 700 years, and there was no picture of him. But the commission voted on the images. Now, going back to the images in your home, I told you table the Renaissance. First of all, the Renaissance was not a religious period. Although many of the paintings in your home came from that period, and you just got a print of an actual painting, the Renaissance was not a religious period. It was secular. The images in your home are prints of paintings that came out of the Italian Renaissance, the 15th century and the 16th century. And I'm going to call some names later on, and all those people were back there during that time. Niccolo Machiavelli, Martin Luther, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, all of them was back there during that time. We're talking about the difference between 12 and 13 years. They knew each other. They walked the streets together. All those paintings are religious. The Italian Renaissance was not a religious period. This was the period of humanism, and secular men were running the show. They maintained man was the measure of all things. Spain and Portugal had been ordered by earlier popes to reduce the servitude of all infidel people. The money men back then were the Spanish Borgia family. And like today, these rich organizations tried to get their boy in the papacy. Just like you got different organizations today to try to get their boy in the presidency. Because there's a correlation between politics and economics. So if you got a lot of money, you want to get your boy in the White House. But back then, they were trying to get their boy into the papacy. You got two rich families back then that was in power. You got the Borgia family, the Spanish. You got the Italian family, the Medici. I'll spell those words. Borgia, B-O-R-G-I-A. Medici, M-E-D-I-C-I. Both of these powerful families managed to get one of their boys in the papacy. All right? Both families had popes in their pocket. In the 16th century, and there's a pope I want to bring up, in the 16th century, from 1503 to 1513, the pope was a thug. He was Pope Julius II. Pope Julius II. He was nicknamed the warrior pope or fearsome pope. He put fear in people. He wasn't a religious person. He was born into a patriot of the arts, and he was into politics. He was more of a patriot of the arts, and he was in politics. He wasn't that religious. He was backed by a very wealthy and powerful Medici family, M-E-D-I-C-I. I think I spelled it correctly, M-E-D-I-C-I, the Medici family. Julius II got his name not from Julius I, but Julius Caesar. He was described by Machiavelli, those who read Machiavelli, the prince. He was described by Niccolo Machiavelli as the ideal prince. For those not familiar with Machiavelli's book, a prince must know how to control resistance. He must be well armed, using cruel, swift, and firm methods. He must give the appearance of being good, but know how to use evil. This is the kind of pope that these images were born out of. Italy wanted to assert itself as a world power. It was the Italian Renaissance that opened the door to Western so-called civilization. Pope George II was not a religious pope. He was a patron of the arts and politics. Therefore, art is and has been politically and socially relevant. Power was maintained through art. An artist belonged to a guild. Why is it important to belong to a guild? As I mentioned earlier, I'm an author. I have a book. But I'm not known. I'm not known because my book is not on Amazon. It has access to millions of people. It could target a particular audience. So if you're an artist like Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci, and you don't belong to a guild, no one's going to know who you exist. And these guilds had wealthy patrons like the Borgia family and the Medici family. So when artists did their work, they didn't do their own thing. You got to trace who's pulling their purse string, because that's who dictates the art and how the art should be done, just like the U.S. Commission of Fine Art dictated how they want the statue of Dr. Martin Luther King presented to the people. So power was maintained through art. The artists belonged to a guild, and these guilds had patrons who would finance the project. Michelangelo's backing was the Medici family. You did not do your own thing. You did their bidding. Here's for the players back then during this time period, and I have to give this background before I go further and move into more contemporary art, but I have to give you the background of how subliminal messages and things like this didn't just come overnight. They didn't come out of vacuum. There's a history tracing back to this information. All right, the Pope at that time was Pope George II. As I mentioned earlier, he was named the Warrior Pope and Fearsome Pope, and his guy's name from Julius Caesar, not Pope Julius I. He put fear in people and used art to put Italy on the map. And the art that was produced in the Renaissance is still in our homes today. We're talking about thousands. We're talking about years, thousands of years later. He gained wealth by accepting indulgences. If you confess your sins, you get a get out of hell card free. If you confess your sins, you got a get out of hell card. But it was not for free. And the greater your sins were, then the more he charged you. And that's how Martin Luther comes into the picture. Martin Luther was in this the whole time. So you study this history, you go research. So what does Martin Luther have to say about this? Martin Luther makes an argument about indulgences, but what does he have to say about images of the divine being posted in public? Michelangelo was there during the same period. The Pope commissioned Michelangelo to paint the fresco in the Sistine Chapel. I repeat, the Pope. This Pope was Pope George I. He commissioned Michelangelo to paint the frescoes in the chapel. I'm going to quote something, and then I'm going to give you substantiation. At first, Michelangelo did not want to work on them. He considered himself a sculptor, not a painter, and had already quarreled with the Pope over commissions and fees. His fellow citizens in Florence, fearing trouble with the Pope, forced Michelangelo to accept the commission. Michelangelo worked on a ceiling that is 70 feet high. Now, I got a room in my house. It's 12 feet high. And I got a 6-foot ladder. And I wasn't going to go up there to try to paint that ceiling. Here's a ceiling that's 70 feet high in the air. And the Pope would climb up and say, hurry up. And I could guess Michelangelo might have been scared because he would start painting with both hands. The Sistine Chapel, although one would think that it's completely holy because it has religious paintings, it has five pagan paintings, five of them, called Sibyls, spelled S-I, B like in boy, Y like in yes, L like in Larry, S like in son. Five pagan paintings called Sibyls, S-I-B-Y-L-S. Another thing lets us know, this period was not religious, but secular is Michelangelo's David. David is buck naked. He's not just naked, he's buck naked. And we see this, and we don't think a thing about it. We say, oh, it's just a thing of beauty. Art is just for art's sake. Where previously, when they did statues of David, there was sure a correlation between David and Goliath. They would be small, Goliath would be large. They would have Goliath's head on the ground. There was sure a relationship. And Michelangelo's David, he has a sling, but you can hardly see the sling. And there's no Goliath. There's no relationship between him and Goliath. It's all about his body. He's not wearing shepherd's clothing. There's no relationship with him and Goliath. That's the period they was in. The period they was in was all about man. Leonardo da Vinci was back there. Michelangelo was back there. Niccolo Machiavelli was back there. Martin Luther. Let's go ahead and Martin Luther. See what he object. Did he object to these images? Martin Luther had 95 theses condemning the Catholic Church on getting paid for people confessing their sins. They were selling indulgences. I don't want to try to spell indulgence, but I think it's E-I-N-D-U-L-G-E. You put that in, and the computer will give you the rest. But it's called indulgences. He was selling it. You confess your sins, and in essence, you can get out of hell. He nailed 95 theses to the church in 1517. We all know about Martin Luther. We got Martin Luther in school. But we don't know about his partner. Well, they were friends at first, and later on, they were enemies. His name is Andreas Karlstad. Write this down. Andreas, A-N-D-R-E-A-S. Karlstadt, K-A-R-L-S-T-A-D-T. I repeat it, Andreas, A-N-D-R-E-A-S, Karlstadt, K-A-R-L-S-T-A-D-T. Now, Martin Luther, his 95 theses was posted in 1517. Karlstadt's 151 theses was posted a year earlier, 1516. But Martin Luther was in exile. Andreas was out there pulling images off the wall. Him and his people was out there just destroying images. And so Martin Luther came out of, I guess, hiding or whatever, right? And I got a lot of respect for Martin Luther. He, back then, to criticize the church, during that time period, that should have been death. But he had so many followers that I guess is not too much they could have done about him. But him and Andreas was on the same page. But Martin Luther came out. What was his position on images? He said that as long as the images is not in the heart, that it was fine. You can look at the image, but long as it was not in your heart, it was fine. But if you look at the image and it was in your heart, you thought that picture was God, then he said that was wrong. That's his position. Andrew's position was take the images down all together. He had 151 theses. He said take the images down all together. The problem is that the image of Jesus and the saints are not in our heart necessarily, but in our minds. Close your eyes. I'm going to say something. Jesus, what image did you see? This is a result of years of brainwashing, years of subliminal messages, messages that go beyond the conscious mind to get into your subconscious mind to get you to act on a conscious level. The images are embedded in your subconscious mind, and you are acting on a conscious level. That's why when you're at home, and you're trying to, and you do something that you think is ungodly, you put a sheet or a blanket over that picture. Because somehow you think that picture is God. And it's looking at you. But that's not what Martin Luther was talking about. He's talking about in your heart. I'm talking about these images are in our minds. And since they understand subliminal messages today, they are more damaged today, and they are very good at it today, better today than they were back then, and getting into our minds. For this point, I had to lay down the foundation, and I'm going to open the floor for comments, constructive criticisms, harsh criticism, but not direct questions. And if there aren't any, I will continue and move forward with the contemporary art of the day. So Marvin, see if there are any comments, any constructive criticism, any statement questions. If not, I'll move forward.
Yes, sir. I had to try to get off the mute. All right. So right now we're going to ask if there are any questions or comments, right, that anybody would like to ask. 845-277-9250. A lot of information, right? Something to think about. Lots of things to think about. Again, Brother Kevin, thank you so much, right, for your wisdom and your knowledge. And this brother has his book. He's been writing, been doing the work. 40 years is a lot. And I met him when I was much younger. And he is another brother that helped groom and shape me. So I say thank you, Brother Kevin, for the wisdom that you provided. And a long time ago when I joined New Direction and hung out with y'all, I was just a pup. So thank you so much. So let's go to the lines. We're going over to 8502. 8502, do you have a question, comment, thought, or anything you'd like to add to the conversation today? 8502, you're up.
Yes, good afternoon, Brother Marvin. Brother,
welcome,
I'd just
brother.
Like to hear some more.
All right, I heard that. Brother Kevin, you there?
Yeah, thank you, brother.
He wants to hear some more. All right, so you want to give him some more, or you
want to
wait?
No, I want to see if there are more comments. When there's no more comments, then
all right,
we
got
one
more on the call-in line, and most everybody else is listening online. But again, they can always call 845-277-9250 if you want to get in on the discussion. You got a question, and we're going to work on doing another platform that will allow the listeners to snap in or text in their questions or comments, so they won't feel like they're on the spot. So we'll be coming up in the next few weeks with that platform. But, brother, I thank you for your call. I'm going to put you on hold, and if you want to come back, I'll check back in with you. All right, let's go on over. Thank you to 3347. 3347, you are next. You're online. You have a question, a comment, a thought, a statement for Brother at Kebelin. 3347, you're live. All right, Brother Kebelin, continue on.
All right. Mississippi Burning, I forgot what year that came out, the movie Mississippi Burning. I think that came around 1988, something like that. And I went to see that movie, and it was fights all around the corner. I mean, I was in a sea of whiteness. When I get inside, it was no different. And in that movie, you got blacks being pissed on, crapped on, castrated, raped, called all kinds of the N-word, all kinds of things, right? And while all this was going on in the movie, you could hear a pin drop. It was so quiet in there. Then when the cavalry came, the cavalry is a good guy, Gene Hackman and Willem Dafoe. When the cavalry came, all the whites in the movie theater stood up. I'm still seated. They stood up and started clapping. Now, I'm in my late 60s, and all the years of going to the movies, I've never had that happen in a movie theater for almost everybody in the audience to stand up and start clapping. I'm still seated. I'm in a sea of white, and I'm still seated. I had to look at the review. I got the newspaper, and the person who did the review said the same thing. He said it was so many whites around the corner and very few blacks. He said, why were whites go see a movie knowing that blacks are going to be castrated, pissed on, stanked on, raped, called the N-word, lynched? Why would whites go to see that? He said, there's an unwritten rule in Hollywood that says you can show black folks being pissed on, crapped on, raped, anything, as long as whites save them at the end. I never forgot that. I never forgot that. You can't save yourself. The abolitionist had to be white. Nat Turner can't be an abolitionist. Gabriel Prosser can't be an abolitionist. Or John F. Kennedy has to save you, or Bill Clinton has to save you. So that is the rule I use when I measure these movies in Hollywood. I'm trying to think of what movie that was out there, but you got to save yourself. I analyze movies in that manner. Why look at Django? Django was trying to get his wife, I think it was Broomhilda, B-R-O-O-M, Broomhilda, B-R-O-O-M, H-I-L-D-A. When he got the opportunity to kill the guy, he couldn't do it. Something happened where there's another guy that stepped in and did it for him in Django. So people don't look at the subliminal messages in these movies. Subliminal is that you got your conscious mind, you got your subconscious mind. They understand that below your conscious mind is a part in you that retains stuff. And if I hold up a pencil, if I ask you, what are you looking at? Most people say a pencil. But if you understand subliminal seduction, you would say, I see a pencil, a hand holding that pencil, a man, a wall behind that man. So they understand subliminal seduction. If you have, look at a magazine, you see a picture of a lady in a bikini sitting on the hood of a red Corvette, you go out and you buy that Corvette. You say you did it on your own. You didn't do it on your own. Advertisements told you, if I get that red Corvette, I can have that woman in the bikini. So all these subliminal messages are in these Hollywood movies. So if we look at the movie, we don't look at it at all. Now, I mentioned earlier about relationships. Why can't we have a conversation and I give my opinion and you give your opinion without we going at, back and forth at one another? The Black Panther, I put it out there real quick. I'm not saying it was a good movie. It was a good movie. But who was the hero? Sure, the sister was doing their thing. The brother was doing their thing. But everybody who's in the military knows you want to get high ground, because the man that got high ground has advantage. He's shooting down in the valley. The one in the valley has to shoot up against the law of gravity. The bullet's going to come down. So you give me 1,000 people on the ground with rifles, with guns, and all types of ammunition, and you get one person with a single jet airplane and with a gun on it. I'll take that one airplane over 1,000 men on the ground any day. The white guy in the movie was the hero. He's in the air. He's coming to heavens. He's coming to heavens. And at one point in the movie, and I'm going to paraphrase this, I can't remember the exact line, but the girl pretty much told him and he said something about how many more planes out there. He told her how many, right? He did one of them John Wayne things. I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him. And so that's why today those who got a strong air attack are victorious. No matter how many people on the ground, Malcolm X said, you couldn't beat nobody on the ground. You couldn't beat a bunch of rice farmers. But if you got a strong air attack, you can. So in that movie, he was the hero. I try to find one movie. I can't think of one. So maybe from the callers can give me an example of a movie where we got to save ourselves. In the movie where Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, there had to be he had to go through his Jewish lawyer to get stuff accomplished. The only movie I've seen close to us saving ourselves, and even that one, a white person had to do it, and that was A Time to Kill, where Samuel Jackson's daughter was pissed on. They threw beer cans on her. They raped her. They hung on her, left to die, but she managed to survive. And Samuel Jackson knew that those boys was going to walk, so he killed them. He didn't deny he killed them. Everybody saw that he did it. And he had to tell Matthew Dunham how to represent him. He said to Matthew Dunham, he said, you one of the boys. And Matthew Dunham said, no, I'm your friend. He said, no, you're not my friend. He said, you just like them. You don't want to be, but you just like them. And I need you to represent me. But he told Matthew Dunham, don't go up there and tell them it was a black baby that was being raped. Don't tell them it was a black baby that was pissed on and stanked on and lynched. They don't want to hear that. You got to paint that picture in their mind that was their child. That's the closest I've seen to a movie where we represent ourselves. But even that, Matthew Dunham had to do it for Samuel Jackson. So I look at that when I look at movies right here. Yes, why can't I say a movie is good, but? Yeah, a lot of the movies are good, but there's some things that we need to be addressing these movies. Then there's another movie, my favorite movie of all time. Those who know me intimately know that my favorite movie of all time is The Wizard of Oz, the 1939 movie, The Wizard of Oz. Take into consideration the time period that was in and the special effects, right? But it has so many symbolisms, and people all over have gave interpretation of The Wizard of Oz, but no one I know has did it from an African eye. From an African eye. When I was in study group a long time ago, Barbara Kofi went to the chalkboard, and he said, you got north, south, east, and west. North, south, east, and west. I think I was in my 30s then. He said, what's missing? Now, you got a lot of people in the group, in the room, about 25 people, didn't know the answer. He said, what's missing? He said, north, south, east, and west. What's missing? He said, the center. The center. I never forgot that. Sometimes you go to lectures, right, and things people say, right, you don't know how it's going to affect you later down the road. So I've watched Wizard of Oz over and over for years, right? Each year I get something out of it, right? So I said, you got a witch in the north. You got a bad witch in the east. You get a bad witch in the west. Where's the south? Because in the book, there's a south. And we know if you got north, east, and west, you got to have a south. So I did some research to find out they put the north and south together at the top of your conscious development to form a pyramid. So you got the north and south together in the Wizard of Oz. You got the east and you got the west. That's a pyramid. And I kept saying the people, and if you got Jewish writers behind anything, right, I look for symbolism because there's no African culture. There's no African culture. We did a lot of abstract reasoning and things, right? So I said you got north, south, east, and west. Where is the center? And I said to myself, where is Kansas? I went online, and I typed in Kansas. I said, smack dead in the middle of North America. And I'm still looking at the movie. I'm still looking at the movie. And at the end of the movie, sometimes I try to figure out stuff on my own. When I can't, I go to an elder, right? At the end of the movie, the wizard is going away in a balloon. But it's not just an ordinary balloon. It's not a white balloon or a colorful balloon. It has Omaha on it. Right there, you should suspect something done. See, when people go to the movie, they don't suspect they're being seduced. They just say, it's just a movie. I don't do that. I'm saying, now, why is this word Omaha written on this balloon? Why can't it just be a white balloon? Why can't it just be a colorful balloon? Why is this Omaha with no explanation? I kept looking. I couldn't figure it out, so I went to my elder. I said, why is Omaha written on this balloon? Look up Nebraska. I said, why Nebraska? He said, because Omaha was the capital of Nebraska before Lincoln. Lincoln didn't become a capital of Nebraska until after Dishonest Abe died. So I went online. Sometimes you find information by accident. I went online. I typed in Nebraska. Nebraska. And what shows up? The Kansas-Nebraska Act. The Kansas-Nebraska Act. The Kansas-Nebraska Act. The movie starts off in Kansas. At the end, it's Nebraska. If you go and study history, the Kansas-Nebraska Act, it reversed the Missouri Compromise. In Kansas-Nebraska Act, if you look at the map, they're so close together. So in The Wizard of Oz, at the end of the movie, they ask you, do you want to go back home? I interpret it as, you want to be free or you want to be a slave? You want to be free or you do want to be a slave? He said, I got to be free. I got to be free. So it starts in Kansas, and you get down to Nebraska. At the end of the movie, you'll know who the characters are, who the wizard is, because it has a historical backing to it. You got, if you look at Dorothy, back the wizard would be McKinley. You know, McKinley was assassinated. He's one of those assassinated. And Theodore Roosevelt was the vice president. And he called McKinley a coward. And in the movie, Dorothy said, you're nothing but a coward. She called it to the Cowardly Lion, you're nothing but a coward. And Dorothy Dorothey. If you spell the word out right, you'll see Theodore, which is Theodore Roosevelt back then during that particular time. So all these movies has some subliminal messages. Not all of them are subliminal messages. They have coded meanings. It's a video online called, it's a cartoon online called All This and Rabbit Stew. And I'm gonna, this will be my last point because I just prepared for one aspect of people's culture today and not the rest of it, right? But we get an opportunity, there's a video online called All This and Rabbit Stew. It's a cartoon. When you see it, it's obvious that it's degrading. Before there was Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, there was Bugs Bunny and Little Black Sambo. Before there were 10 little Indians that we got in school, there was 10 little niggas. They had to change it. So a lot of us later on got Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, not knowing it was Bugs Bunny and Black Sambo. So you look at the movie, you could tell that it's degrading, but what you don't know without the symbolism is that the degree in which they degrade us, that's the part you don't know. In the movie, you see the word sucker. Sucker was what they called our black babies during our enslavement. You see the word rabbit. Rabbit has two meanings. It's an animal with ears, a little fur animal with ears, but rabbit also is R-A-B-B-E-T, like a rabbit punch. There's a lot of symbolism in that movie, and if you see a stunt, which means we as a people have been stunt in our growth. You see a fig leaf, which deals with reproduction. You know, so it says, in essence, it says that we reproduce way with people like ourselves. So it's all symbolism in these movies. But the point I try to bring about when I first started is that art is not for art's sake. And hopefully after this program today, you will look at sculpture. You will look at certain paintings. You will look at these movies, and you will not say it's just for art's sake. Art is politically and socially relevant, and to us, it should be relevant to the African experience, like Gil Scott-Heron. The revolution would not be televised. He talked about no-lock laws. His music was political. It's political. But the music today, and not all the music today, but music today, degrading women, degrading each other, right, is not us. It's not something that's going to give us power. It's not something that's going to make us better. It's things that's going to be destructive and degrade African people. That's it I have to say. See if you have any more questions. If not, hopefully they got something out of it. If I didn't make myself clear on certain points, I will accept that because I want to make sure people are clear. They didn't get certain points. But I would appreciate it if I got comments, criticism, constructive or harsh. I don't care. And state the questions. All right, Bobby, back to you.
All right. Well, we don't criticize on this show. It's all about building. We ain't tearing each other down. Mm-hmm. We building. 845-277-9250 is the number to call if you're listening online. Join us for the conversation. The brother got lots of knowledge, right? And some things that we really need to think about in terms of the images that we see and how they really impact your subconscious mind and the things that have been sent to us subliminally that we now think are just cool, and it's not, right? Again, knowledge is power, and we have the power once we understand what it is that we're being fed and how we can change our minds and change our reality by understanding what I consider to be the subtext, and that's the thing that's not being said. So there are three things that we got to understand: the text or the image, right? The context, that means the meaning of the image, right, or the words, and then the subtext, and that is what's not being stated. So, Brother Kevin, you're right. Let me ask you a quick question before we go back to the lines. What inspired you, brother, of knowledge that most of our people don't know? You're talking about regular, everyday, ordinary African-American and black people. They ain't into this stuff, man. How did you get started, and what would be your suggestions for taking those first steps?
Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark said religion is a deification of a people's culture. They said religion is a deification of a people's culture. That way, when you look at history, economics, politics, social order, creativity, religion is the deity of them all, right? Your religion determines how you're going to, when it comes to art, your religion determines whether you're going to do art for the betterment of humanity or to degrade humanity. When it comes to music, your religion determines whether you can write stuff that's going to degrade put women down or whatever, or you could do stuff that's going to lift us up. When it comes to economics, your religion determines whether you're going to be honest with this man and deal with him fairly, or you're going to cheat this person. When it comes to politics, your religion determines whether you're going to talk about equality, or you're going to have the haves and the have-nots, but one person sitting on billions of dollars, while another person got bare enough to feed his. Your religion determines that. So as I mentioned earlier, something I know better than anything else was religion. And so this lady at work came to me. She was in her 60s then. She said, I should have picked up the Bible a long time ago. It was so rich. And so she was just praising it so much. I had read the Bible right now. I've read it twice, right? I didn't have the same perspective she had. I was mad. All that killing going on. I said, what did she see that was good, you know? Then I realized I began to appreciate the Bible. I realized it's a book about the cosmos. And the stuff is coded. Now, a lot of people don't know the codes, but I know the codes. So once you know the codes.
Come on, brother.
Once you know the codes, you really appreciate it, right? So then since I knew the codes in the Bible, right, then I could go back to the movies, right, and pick out those same codes because I already knew the codes. You know what I mean? I don't know everything, right? Now, as I mentioned art, right, for example, they did a picture recently, I think, on the Obama. Each president has a portrait, a White House portrait. They did with Obama. There's paintings there for the public, and there's paintings in your house. I repeat, there's paintings for the public, and there's paintings in your house. This is in the White House. I don't have access to that. But I can bet the first black president in that White House, something wrong with that picture. But I'll never see it. Because that history tells me they're going to do stuff in there. And sometimes I laugh, right? It's like when you was in school and you're fighting your enemy. And he's your enemy, but he stuck one in there on you, right? You said, and you see a little blood dripping from your lip, right? You said, that was a good one. I had to get it to you. Although you're my enemy, I got to get it to you. That was a good one, right? I bet if I go to the White House and look at that picture, that portrait of Obama, there's something in there that ain't right. You know what I mean? I could be wrong. But history bears that it ain't likely that they could miss the opportunity to stick something in there that ain't supposed to be in there. It could be a handcuff. You know, if you do some research on these statues, these Confederate statues, whether the person's sitting on the horse or off the horse, let you know whether the person died in battle or they died for some disease, right? That's a statue, I think it's in New York. Well, Theodore Roosevelt, it's a controversial statue. But Theodore Roosevelt sitting on a horse. They got the Indian to the right side of him, and they got the African to the left side of him. And people said, he's just showing we all together, right? That's what some asses interpreting, right? It looks like a nice relationship between the African, the Indian, and the white man. Well, he's on a horse. They're beside him. That'd be equated to President Trump being a Mercedes Benz and an African brother to the left side of Mercedes Benz and the Indian to the right side of Mercedes Benz walking, or he's driving a Mercedes Benz. So some of these exhibits out here are not out there. They're not being unattacked, but they are being attacked and they are being examined by us. But we don't know it. But we should take it upon ourselves to look at something right and say, it's a thing of beauty, but it's more to it than that. First of all, trace the money. Who's putting this out there? Why is it for your interest? And the fact that President Biden had to remove four members from the U.S. Commission of Fine Arts after 110 years, that tells you something right there. There's some shaking stuff going on. That's what got me started. That is not no one thing. It's many of things. And I learned a whole lot from, like I said, George Brown and Bruce Bridges. Some things I remember Bruce said, the Bruce don't remember he said. And maybe I can recall bigger from those stories he told many years ago in a Nick segment. But there's a million things that got me started. It's not no one particular thing. As I mentioned about my book, right, that started as a result of a male and female conference that I did. And somebody said, why would you do a male and female conference? You're not even married, right? I said, well, you listen to Dr. Phil, and he's been divorced, and you listen to Dr. Phil, but you won't listen to me. You know what I mean? So it's just one of those things. It's not like I'm doing things in a vacuum. I got my ancestors. I got historic people, contemporary Africans, and I got my ancestors, right, that with me all the time. So when I write, it's not that I'm writing in a vacuum. Amos Wilson, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Asa Hill, all those have led the way. So it's not like if you're going through an area that you haven't been before, some new waters, right, that you don't have the tools to go through that. You do have the tools. If you tap into your ancestors, you can always get through.
Kevin Lynn.
Yeah.
Man, you are powerful beyond belief. I'm sorry right now. We finished. I was telling you we were doing the conference here today, man. We're doing some great work. So before we wrap up, man, you told us a lot and you mentioned so many different things and images are important to our people. And I asked you how you got started. I'm going to go back to the line for a minute and then I want to come back and ask you one more question. Let's go over to 8502 because he said keep going. So let's get him in here. 8502, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon again.
Hey, brother, yeah. How are you?
Yes.
Glad to hear from you again.
Question, comment, statement.
I was statue of Arthur Ashe, but he was naked.
What? Say it again. Tell me, I didn't hear it. Can you repeat what he said?
At the U.S. Open Tennis Stadium in Queens, they put a statue of Arthur Ashe outside in front of the stadium, but the statue of him is naked.
I didn't know that. Hey, you say Queens?
Yes.
Give me a picture of that.
Brother, I didn't know that, brother. I didn't know that, brother.
Yeah.
I like when somebody gives me something I don't know, right? So now he got me looking that up. Cause I ain't hear about that. That's what I'm talking about. I want contribution from those out there.
I won't ask why they doing that. See, that's some. Yeah. Okay. So again, the image, right? We got a great African American tennis player, and why he is naked, I could not imagine. But again, let's stay with the imagery, right? Of how we have been shaped to see ourselves, right? In terms of in this culture and society, you got big nose, big lips, nappy head, all of these different caricatures and images that now, like when you said, brother, close your eyes and see Jesus, I saw a strong, black, muscular dude, right, that mm-hmm. just was powerful. That's how I have reconditioned my mind to see him more than the image that was presented to me early in life. So those images are important that you restructure your mind. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts and those images. What you think, brother?
Well, it makes me cry when I think about these sisters with short hair that I had passed on for years, right? When I was in elementary school, I would see a sister, right, and fine sister, dark-skinned sister, right? But I convinced myself, nah, she can't be that fine because she's black. That was the images that done to us, right? And I wish I could see some of these sisters today and go back and apologize, you know. But I grew up in a generation where you had to have a red bone. Nobody ever explained to me why you had to have a red bone. It's just that we were conditioned that the lighter you are, the more attractive you are. It's not true that a light-skinned person is more attractive than a dark-skinned person, a white person more attractive than a black person, right? But you got a system that has convinced you of that. And when these images came about, and you were in church, and here's the problem. You got a man that's missing in the home. You got a husband that's missing in the home. So you go to church on Sunday to get, and this is my bar from Dr. John Henry Clark. You go to church on Sunday to find a man to replace the biological man that's missing in your home. And that biological man don't coincide with the one that's missing in your home. The image that you see in your house don't coincide, the image that you see at church do not coincide with the image that you have of that male that's missing in your home. He might have been dead, he might be on drugs, whatever, you know. So when you set that image as replacement for the image of your home, in a psychology, you got a black image in your home, and you go to church, and you get an image that don't look like that to replace the images in your home, in a psychologist of noble worth will say you're psychologically deranged. But we don't look at it that way. Well, look at it away. In the church, I was said something, but I was scared to talk, right? You said, this is the Son of God. So I don't look like that. So I can't be in God's favor. These are things that were going in my mind as a child. So later on, when I see a sister who's dark-skinned, and although she's beautiful, I try to convince myself that she ain't beautiful. And then I go back and see that same sister, right? And I don't know, I want to, sorry, sister, I'm sorry for what I've done to you, right? And we need to do that. We need to do these things.
I heard that. Well, all the sisters out there, no matter what complexion you shade, we love y'all, right? Keep being your natural, authentic self. Keep bringing your beauty to the world. Kevin Lynn, thank you so much. And we got about 3 minutes left in the show, right? And I just want to say thank you. And I want to get some closing comments from you before we wrap up today. Great job. Great information. We got to ask you back for more, right? And what inspires you to continue to do that great work, brother?
What inspires me is that no African ever died until being brought to these shores. No African ever died until being brought to these shores, right? We didn't look at death as something final. It's another stage of life existence. And so if I put this information out there, then I will live forever. So like I mentioned Bruce Bridges earlier, sometimes Bruce don't remember the stories that he told us, but I remember. And so each time I repeat the story, it keeps him alive. So when I'm no longer here in a physical sense, somebody's going to pick up what I said and carry the banner on. So I do this so I can live forever.
All right, brother. Thank you again. And tell the audience the name of your book and where they can get it from.
Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. Divorce Western Culture, Not Your Mate. My website is www.bookstouplyftyouth.com. Books to Uplift Youth, YOUTH.com.
All right. Thank you, brother. Again, thank you. Knowledge is power. We appreciate you. And as you always say, forward. We appreciate you, brother. Thank you for another
right,
show.
Cool.
Thank you for
right.
listening. Right, the brother is powerful. We keep on bringing them to you so you get to understand the knowledge that we grew up on. I can't be willing to tell you just like Brother George, man, we grew up on this stuff. Right, learning about ourselves and getting more and more information that gave us confidence. And now it's your turn. And it doesn't matter what you used to know. It's whether we can recondition ourselves. Whether we can begin to change the way that we've been conditioned and programmed to think about ourselves and how we treat each other. So all that we see that's negative is a reflection of the conditioning that we've been placed under. And when you learn to love yourself and how to love and thirst for knowledge and information and then actualize that information by demonstrating the love for yourself in your words, in your action, how you treat your man or how you treat your woman, then it is a true reflection of the king god or queen goddess that you really are. Learn to be informed. Learn to be motivated and inspired to become the best that you can be, the very best that you can be, by simply trying to learn more about who you are and learn to love yourself inside and out. That's it for this week. It's 365 days of this great stuff right here that we continue to bring you knowledge, wisdom, so you could get understanding. And lastly, remember this. There is the text or the image. There's the context is what the images present. And then that's the subtext, what it is that is saying that you don't get unless you know the code. That's it for this week.
To reach, oh, to reach the unreachable.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, brother.